Today, I want to speak about something which is organically and biologically important for each and every person, indeed each and every living entity, but since we are humans, we have to deal with the human being level. Now, if you are looking on your player, you will see that the title of the lecture is DNA. Now, of course, I don't really feel that's what I wish to speak about, because I wish to speak about the wiring in the body. So perhaps the title DNA does not biologically or physiologically explain exactly what we're going to speak about. However, the concept is good enough so that we can explain about how our organisms, our living organisms, the biological living energy that we are, affects us in very significant manners. Now, we as living entities, we are born into certain situations. And in these situations, we have very specific, very definite programs in our lives. Now, if you think about the process of death, the process of evolution, the processes by which we take birth, you will understand how important this is to us. Now, spiritually speaking, it would make no sense that a living being simply is born and dies unless there is an evolutionary process going on. Now, we all know, we all have experience that day by day, our accumulated experiences have the tendency to expand our consciousness, to expand our understanding of our existence. Now, of course, there are people who are so depressed about life and so hopeless about life, they feel that that is not true. But in reality, even their continued experience of depression is teaching them something, is giving them an awareness of something very important. And that continued awareness, that continued understanding, even in a depressed state, has purpose, has meaning. There's some value to it which we cannot deny. I'd like to use this example of a very depressed person because I think it's a very good example. Usually we use examples in a very positive way. We use words like evolution and expansion and awareness. I'd like to start from the platform of a person who's extremely depressed. Now, there are many reasons why a person may be depressed. First of all, there are biological reasons for depression. There are hormones in our body. There are diseases in our body, or there are factors just that are organic in our environment which can cause depression. There are economic factors, there are political factors, there are family factors, there are social factors. There are so many factors which can lead us to depression. Now, when one is depressed, one tends to stay depressed, and in fact, the depression itself makes one more depressed. Now, there's two things that you can consider from this point. One is the person who dies in this depressed state, and two is the person who starts to try to understand why they're depressed and how to get out of that depression. Now, I'd like to start speaking about the one who tries to do something and go to the point of one who dies in that state. Now, it's very interesting when you speak about trying to do something about depression, because what are the factors which drive or motivate a person to try to conquer depression? Well, the main factor is that I don't deserve this and I want to do something to get out of this because I don't like it. The basic motivation is I don't like this experience, I want to change it. Now, the other person says, I deserve this. I deserve this depression. I deserve this punishment. I deserve to suffer because I'm guilty. Mea culpa. I embrace this suffering. I embrace this depression. It is what I need. It is my fate. Now, it might just be a person's fate to experience that. I don't think it would be correct for me to say offhand, no, that's wrong, that's a misconception. Everybody should try to better themselves all the time. Sometimes we have to say, yes, embrace your awareness of the causes of your depression. For example, failure, personal failure or interrelational failure can make one depressed, or failure in one's endeavors. So one can say, let's just forget about it and move on. One can also say, embrace that failure. Own it. Take responsibility for it. Now if you remember, well, maybe you don't remember, but I once spoke in a lecture about once when I had some adhesions in my leg and it was so painful to get rid of them, and the therapist was digging elbows into them and everything. It was so much pain, I was screaming through the roof. Yet I used this technique of just totally getting into the pain, totally experiencing the pain, putting my consciousness right into that pain and dissolving it from within. I was using this technique of embracing the pain and putting my consciousness right in the pain, because by doing so, I was accepting it and I was taking responsibility for it, and thus I was releasing it at the same time. And again, we talked about this one movie about this Little Shop of Horrors, where Bill Murray was the patient and Steve Martin was the dentist. Steve Martin as the dentist was a sadist, which somehow makes sense. And Bill Murray as the patient was the masochist, which also somehow makes sense. It was a perfect combination. Sadist meets masochist. So Steve Martin's main job was to give pain. Bill Murray's main job was to feel pain and to enjoy it. Now, he was laughing when the pain was being inflicted. But the sadist, Steve Martin, only enjoyed giving pain when the person receiving pain was suffering and trying to resist the pain. And when Bill Murray was not only receiving the pain, but laughing and enjoying the pain, this created enormous disturbance in the head of the sadist, who said, "This is not fun." So he stopped. Sometimes the world around us, sometimes the universe around us, is a reflection of elementals, a reflection of our own negative energies, which wish to cause upon us a pain for some reason. Now, there could be hundreds of reasons why, but for some reason or another, forces outside of us, or even our own reflections, have concluded that giving pain to us is the right thing to do. Yet, the justification, or rather, let's say, not justification, but the pleasure in presenting us with that pain becomes nullified when we don't accept it as pain, when we embrace it, when we own it, when we focus our consciousness so far within it that it no longer appears to us as pain, but it appears to us as our right. And then it dissolves. I have personal experience of this happening over and over and over again. Just like we hear in conversations with God, that which you resist persists. The more you push it away, the more it pushes upon you, because its purpose is to push upon you. Your purpose to push it away may not be stronger than its purpose to push upon you, but even so, it will create a friction all by itself of this conflict. I remember also when I was young, I've spoken about all this, but I think it's worth repeating. In the lunch break, kids used to run around and bash into each other and knock each other over. Especially stronger kids used to do that too, weaker kids. And usually they left me alone. I don't know why. I used to stand on the side. I thought the whole thing was stupid. But one day somebody charged at me, and all I did was just simply take their energy, slightly step aside, and help them along on their way, and the person fell right on his head and was very bewildered. There are many martial arts techniques which are based on the principle of not trying to resist an energy, but to flow with it in such a way as to redirect it in another place. So back to depression. What does this all have to do with depression? Because fighting against the depression, resisting depression, being depressed about depression, these things are going to get you more depressed. Whereas embracing it, accepting it, rolling with it will be a means to dissolve it. How does that work? You simply relax totally. As if you were going into a meditative state, you embrace the particular situation, you accept it, you own it, and you just totally absorb your consciousness into it. And in this way, you dissolve it. Now, this is not a magic pill. This is not a 100% cure of all difficulties and problems. But it's one of the most progressive ways to deal with this usually very difficult situation. I find that when I get depressed, the best things for me to do are go for a walk in nature, to go into meditation and simply relax, or to do physical exercise, which will just burn up my physical energy in such a way that it will just create a relaxed state. For when you are in such a relaxed state, when you are in such a situation, what happens is that it becomes very clear what is going on, and you no longer have any difficulty with it. You no longer have any fear of it. It's not something which is terrorizing you. It's just something that is. Like, for example, now in some parts of the world, in the northern hemisphere, it's very cold. So if you were to go outside and all the time say, ah, it's so cold, I can't take it. Oh, I can't take the cold. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. It's so cold, I can't take it. You'd not be able to deal with it. What do? You put on a lot of clothes. You walk outside. You say, hey, it's cold. Let's get somewhere. Let's move around. In fact, I heard from people in Siberia that the biggest selling product on the street in these freezing cold days when they have like minus 40 degrees Celsius is ice cream. Now that, I would say, is embracing the cold. So dealing with this depressed stage within one's own living consciousness is a question of directly confronting that which caused the depression. But let's understand this from the other point of view, the point of view of the person who dies in a depressed state, because it's kind of like a circle. We were just coming from the other half of the circle to death, dealing with the depression. Now, what happens from the death through that period in between and the life leading up to that state? You know, some people are wired to be depressed more than others. There are certain physiological or certain kinds of types, and I'm sure one day they'll find a DNA strand or a DNA code for genetic depression. Now, when a person goes through their lives, when a person is not able to deal with a depressed state, and they die in such a depressed state, it can also be because of a biological thing. At the point of their death, they are experiencing a very great differential between the living state and the beyond the physical body state. It's kind of like when it's outside, it's a very, very, very cold, and you come inside to a room which is not very warm, but it's a lot warmer than outside. Because of the differential in temperature between outside and inside, you feel the inside temperature as very warm until you get used to it, and then you realize, it's not so warm either. So let's say you've been in a very depressed, very miserable, very suffering state. Then you leave this body where the causes of depression, if they were based in an organic substance, are no longer there, you can feel great relief. Now, there are situations where a person was not really dealing with an organic type of depression. Let's say they were depressed because of the loss of loved ones or something. They may have different avenues in which to enter after the death. Those who were lucky, for instance, will be met by those who they lost in their lifetime, who they were very attached to, and they will feel very connected again when they depart from this body. Those who are not so lucky or not so advanced may not have that capacity, so they create or they agree to be part of the creation of an alternate reality where they enter into it and have the association of all these persons in that alternate reality. That alternate reality can be a very mentally created one. In other words, it's a self-created psychic image of exactly what one wants it to be, or it can be an actual physical, quote-unquote, kind of a realm, as in a heavenly planet or a higher planet within the universe. But in either case, the driving, motivating force is the desire to have that which was lost or to connect to that which would be the resolution of the depressed state. Some people can stay in that situation for a long time. They don't see any need to do anything else. They had something, they lost it in a life, they wanted it back, they found it, and they dedicated their whole life to the capturing and the relating with and the enjoying of that particular thing. However, let's talk about another person who moves through a more evolutionarily, if that's a word, beneficial process through that depression in the last life, through the death, and into a situation in the in-between lives, which is hoping to resolve the root cause of this situation. For ultimately, even those who create their own psychic reality as a resolution to their problem, even those who go to other places, which are kind of a wonderful way to avoid all problems, they all ultimately have to come back to this point by which you actually deal with the underlying motivation which fuels your progress. Now, I am not exactly here talking about simply the means by which we can deal with depression. I'm not talking about depression. It's not depression, really. It's just an example, although it's a good one. But I'm talking about the way we become wired in this lifetime, which I feel is very important, how our organic wiring is created. So let's say I have gone through all of whatever processes I needed to get to the point of dying and moving into that in-between state, which is the preliminary platform for a birth again. So I am now faced with the images on whatever screens or projective devices or whatever way in which I'm going to view those aspects of my previous life or lives which have created a situation within me which caused me to die in this depressed state or caused me to feel very uncomfortable with life. Now, I feel that this discussion is essential. It's essential. It's so important. I can't emphasize it enough because we have just hit upon a concept which is the key to life itself. It's called the zest for life, the reason for my existence, the feeling that life is something I wish to embrace. Those who have a zest for life, those who have this feeling of love of life, live. Those who have a feeling of disliking life, being uncomfortable with life, arrange for their own exit from life. When one can deal with these situations which caused one to feel uncomfortable with life, and accept them, yet reach out to and connect to that which makes life worth living, the zest of life, one can transform one's entire existence. The same principle is active in anything you do, even in a marriage. If you don't want to be married really, you don't really want to be in the situation, you will create subtly, unconsciously, different kinds of conflicts or situations to destroy that. So you have an excuse to get out of it because you're not bold enough to simply say, I don't like this, I want something else. I have a relative who couldn't stand the business they were doing, so they unconsciously, subconsciously, subterfuged, made sabotage the whole business and caused it to collapse so they could be very happy in saying, oh, I have to give that up, I'll do something else that I like to do. When you feel uncomfortable, when you feel uneasy about something, but you don't embrace that, you don't focus upon it with your pinpointed energy of clarity, you can't really understand these things, you don't embrace them, therefore you don't deal with them in a conscious level. You have to let your subconscious deal with them because you're not brave enough to deal with it. So it takes a long time and a lot of arranging under the surface to get to the place you want to go. Whereas the person who is clear about it, who embraces it without fear, because they have a zest for life, they want to get to the life right away, immediately can understand, I don't like this, I don't want to do that, I'm going to do something else. But you can't have this zest for life unless you have a zest for yourself, unless you have a feeling of acceptance, of love, of feeling comfortable with yourself. You can't possibly feel that way about your life. It is very difficult. It is not easy. We've gone through so many ways and so many explanations. But the basic thing that stops us from feeling good about ourselves is this depression we have that has come from situations or difficulties or failures in our past. Feelings of how we are sinners, feelings of how we are incompetent or incapable or not good. We're just not good. These things are pushing down our capacity to feel good about ourselves and therefore to feel good about life. And therefore, philosophies which say, okay, you're horrible, but God here or some other prophet is wonderful, you just surrender totally. And no matter how bad you are, it won't matter. You'll be lifted out of your bad situation and put in a great situation. Now, that capacity may or may not be there in any particular individual to just pull you out like that. But unless you transform, even you are pulled out, it will not make any difference. Because you will, without that zest for life itself, be dragged back down into this depressed state again later on. Now, of course, one can discuss that in many different ways. One can analyze that in many different ways. I'm not saying that it's not a good thing to do. What I am saying, though, is be very careful of why you are doing something, even if it be a very spiritual thing. If your motivation is liberation from pain, if your motivation is liberation from your depression, liberation from the situation you are in, it's not going to be very useful for you in the long run. So you are in this in-between state after your death, before your next birth. You now are face to face in your more aware situation of the exact reasoning behind your depression that you died in or your consciousness that you died in. And you are facing it. You see it. You know it. And now you are actively involved in choices. What do I do at this point when I have my awareness of this situation? At that point, you understand, I have to do something that directly deals with the root cause of my situation. I have to be placed in an environment. I have to be placed in circumstances which challenge me positively in a way that I will be able to deal with this that I have tried to avoid. Now, not everybody does that. Some people say, oh, I can't handle another struggle. I can't handle another difficult life. I want to take it easy. I want to float for a while. I want to coast for a while. They can do that too. That person is wired in a way in which they can just go on and tolerate and deal with whatever situation they're in. But just below the surface, they have these like fears which they never tap into, which sometimes they get a glimpse of, but they never really tap into. They basically float through life. But for those who have accepted the responsibility to deal with it, which are most of the people, by the way, they accept their situation, which will specifically indicate exactly what they have to deal with. Now, you've heard about time, place, and circumstances. Exactly when you take birth and how you take birth is very much a factor of time, of place, and of circumstances. Your organic body, with its particular DNA code, with all of these events wired into it, for example, diseases or nervous problems or other problems, all the organic situations that we are born into, the specific weight of it, the height of it, the strength of it, the capacity of it, this is part of that process. Now, of course, my spiritual energy, my etheric field is the same, but it now works through the filter of being born at a particular time in a particular place, which is a composite of all the universal planetary energies upon me, which are manifested, for example, in my astrological chart. My type of personality, the tools I have psychically or psychologically, my emotional sensitivity or what I like, what I don't like, that which I like to relate to, that which I don't like to relate to, is very set at that moment of birth. The parents I have, the place where I'm born, the type of economic or social or political situation they're in, all of these things are the field within which I have to work and are perfectly tuned to what it is that I have to accomplish. And you will find all of these situations that you enter into in that life. Even you try to make transformations or changes or move yourself around or create some other kind of adjustment. These things are wired into your DNA. They're wired into your body. They're wired into your fate because it is what life is all about. Now, some people, they try to avoid this. They try to avoid dealing with what they are here to do. So they drink a lot, or they take a lot of drugs, or they do a lot of activities, which tend to divert themselves from their real business. Now, you can do that. It's not like I'm saying you can't do that. But these things are not advantageous for us, because ultimately, we're going to have to come back and deal with these circumstances and situations with which we are born. Don't forget, this wiring that I'm built with has been a product of all of my experiences, every single one of them, from this moment backwards in time. My wiring right now is the greatest possible prototype version of the tools and vehicle that I have to use to progress in life. Look, if you want to really succeed in this life, you have to become a detective. You have to become an investigator. You have to be somebody who's willing to research, experiment, and dig deep to find out the truth. Factually speaking, you don't have to worry about why you love. You don't have to worry about why you feel good. These things are natural. They're part of the spirit. They're part of our life. They're part of that which is all good about our existence. That's fine. You have to worry about the other parts which are not like that. You have to dig into those aspects of our existence which are just opposite to what our nature is, that nature of joy, that nature of bliss, that nature of love and connectedness to all beings everywhere, connectedness to God and connectedness to nature. And when you find those things that you have dug up, examine them, embrace them, understand them, and they will dissolve. You let them go. Why are you afraid? What is it that you are afraid of? And why are you afraid of that thing? How have you come into that situation of fear? These understandings, you have to, are based upon practically the mentality of a research scientist. That's why knowledge has been so exalted in this world, because science is considered to be someone with knowledge. So to be a research scientist about the self, you have to be wise, you have to have knowledge, you have to have capacity. Have to dig deep and look exactly at those things which make you uncomfortable. Because in reality, if you are just simply in contact with your love, simply in contact with your spirituality, everything will be part of that spirituality. You will just go out and exude, just emanate that love wherever you are. That is the natural state, without any fear, without any anxiety, without any discomfort. You may be wired in a particular way, but just because you're wired in that way doesn't mean you have to activate the circuit. And even if the circuit is activated, it doesn't mean you have to continuously keep it activated. You can deactivate it. This is a very important point. Just for example, let's say you have a tendency towards, a physical tendency towards, you're wired with liver problem. Your liver is weak or it will not work properly. And you avoid alcohol, you avoid eating too many fatty foods. You do not have to activate the defective liver. You can live quite properly by just regulating your life. And if you have activated that, you can do something to cure it. You can counteractivate it. You can counteract that situation. So when one is in this life with all of this wiring, one can actually do something about it. The first and foremost thing one can do is understand the wiring and work with it. This people understand now when they do, for example, personality profiling techniques or quality characteristic understanding. You understand the qualities and characteristics of a person and you engage them in a compatible way with these qualities and characteristics. In the Vedic history, that was the whole point of the Varnashram, to engage people according to their personalities, according to their physiology, according to their capacities and mentality, so that they'll be comfortable with their wiring. And nowadays in society, there are so many movements, so many understandings by which people will want to deal with their own wiring in a compatible way. That's why there are even books out which say, do what you love, the money will follow. That's why we say, don't take a square peg and try to put it in a round hole. It won't work. You have to work with what you have. And to do that, you first have to understand what you have. Why do you have it? What is the point of it? And then to accept it. To accept it and to embrace it. And to feel good about it. Let's just take the example of two kinds of people. One kind of person has, let's say, $1,000, and another person has $1,000. One person says, $1,000, what can I do with that? That's useless. I'll just give up. The other person says, $1,000, well, I've got an opportunity to do something. Let me invest something. Let me try to do something with it. The one who accepted the facility can make something out of it. The one who rejected that facility was defeated at the very start. How many people in this world look at themselves in the mirror and say, I am ugly, nobody will want me, or I am fat, or I am this or that, therefore what's the use of trying to find any happiness in relationship? What would be better, to look in the mirror and say, well, this is what I am. I'm not very beautiful, or I'm just kind of okay in this way, or I have this kind of characteristic, so I shall seek out somebody who's compatible with me, who's equal to me, who's complementary to me in that particular way. People have the problem of always trying to reach to places where they don't belong, which are not compatible with them, because they don't accept what they are and understand that they can only work with what they have. To educate oneself according to one's capacities, to engage oneself according to one's capacities, means to be honest with oneself, to look deeply within, to research, to see where the fears are and why the fears are there, to see what the capacities are and why they're there, to work with what you have. This is not just a way to be successful in the world. No, that is also part of it, but that's not the main point. That's not the only point, let's put it that way. A point of it which is so important, yet so missed, is that if I don't work with my wiring, if I don't work with my DNA, I am not working with my evolutionary path that I have taken birth with my own cooperation, which created that situation. I am what I am on all these different levels, all the physiological, biological, emotional, psychological, psychic, spiritual levels, because this is where I have gotten myself over this period of time. And it is only from this spot, from this place, with this body, with this circuitry, that I can move on. Therefore, to accept it, to work with it, not only resolves one's situation within life on the practical level, but it works towards progress on the evolutionary level in a very practical and proper manner. It is from that point of view, from that mentality, from that way of looking at life, that the Varnashram system was actually meant for the good of people in all respects, both materially, so to speak, and spiritually, so to speak. A social structure based on what I am, not on what I should be or would be or could be, but what I am, that is integrated in a complete, comprehensive whole package which deals with my spirit, my body, my circumstances, my society, my family, and so on, is the only way for a comprehensive package of progressive advancement. The problem with the previous descriptions that we have been given of Varnashram was they were couched in such an archaic conceptual manner that it no longer related to people at this time. Therefore, it made no sense. We saw no reason for it. The social distinctions, the sudra, the vaishya, all this thing, the workers, the warrior, the blah, blah, blah. All of this was so simplistic that it did not connect to us in any way. And because this was so emphasized, we lost all connection to the reality of a comprehensive package of life. Therefore, nobody cared about it. Nobody even thought about it seriously. It was just simply a concept to talk about, a fun concept to talk about sometimes, and mainly a concept to deride within most of the time. But in reality, it is the universal structure within which all progress is created, all progress is enlivened. And I am indeed born with a particular wiring, and I indeed have to deal with that wiring. But it doesn't mean that my wiring is the same wiring as my parents. But it means that I am wired and I have to accept it. I have to deal with it because it is my plan. It is my capacity and my potential for progressing in the total picture of my life in all spiritual and all practical affairs. And when we see this comprehensive picture of life, when we embrace our wiring within a spiritual context of moving forward, of progressing, of evolving, We can actually embrace life. We can feel the zest for life. We can feel the happiness of building, the happiness of going forward, and go with enthusiasm, enlivened, and feel happy again. My feeling of happiness with life is depending simply upon my capacity to embrace life to its fullest, to manifest it to its fullest, not on any group, not on any philosophy, not on any organization, not on any commitments, but rather simply to be true to myself in all ways within this wiring that I have, to manifest all that good that I am and all that love that I am in the best possible image of what I am. So I leave you at that point of understanding the importance of all aspects of your life, especially of tasting your life. And we will take a break now. I have a question here, which is interesting because it leads us to something which is going to help us very significantly clarify what we just talked about. And that significant clarification will come by way of understanding how a seemingly impossible obstacle, which is a constant source of disturbance, can be really a blessing in disguise. Now, this question is as follows. This person says, my mother was subjected to the influence of some negative energy entity. From childhood, I have been negatively influenced by it, and I can't understand why this is given to me. If at some stage it is pushing me to a spiritual search, perhaps at one stage it was pushing me to a spiritual search, but now it's an impediment on my spiritual path, how to get rid of it. Now, what is interesting, what is most interesting about this question is that let's just blame this entity for a second on your problems. Let's say this entity is the source of your problems. And we can lament about that. We can say, oh, I've got this problematic personality here. I don't know what to do with it. How do I get rid of this problematic personality? Give me a quick fix on the problematic personality. Now, I would suggest that to understand a solution to a problem, you first have to understand what the problem is. For example, when you have a disease. Now, curing a lot of diseases is not that difficult. The main problem is to figure out what's wrong. For example, I know in homeopathy, and this is also true in all other systems, but in homeopathy it's specifically pronounced, to find out exactly what is the situation is essential to give one specific remedy which will pinpointedly hit the exact target in the bullseye and dissolve the problem. So the skill is in finding out exactly what is the problem. Now, our problem as people is that we know there are things that bother us, but we often don't know exactly what's the problem. I have seen situations, for example, between people or between myself and others, it happens all the time, where I know there's a disturbance, but I don't know why. And even you ask the other person, why is there a problem? They may not be able to answer you because they themselves are not aware of what the problem. From their point of view, there's a problem, but they don't know why. So one can spend a lot of time talking around the issue, but basically the time is best spent to focus on finding out what the problem is by discussing what it is, really, when you get right down to it, that we're supposed to be talking about. So now, diagnosis is 90% of the cure. Absolutely correct diagnosis. Now, that's not necessarily easy to do. Sometimes that can be very difficult. Now, let's say this example of this person who has some entity. In other words, they feel a power coming from beyond them, which is impacting on them in a way which they feel is negative. So therefore, they assume the personality is a negative personality. Now, whether or not that's true is to be examined, to be questioned, because it's not necessarily so. Just because I think it is unpleasant, that defines what the other personality is. For example, I may be a criminal, I may be robbing banks. The police may come and capture me and give me a hard time. I may conclude they make me feel bad, therefore they are negative. My problem is that I don't really understand the problem. The problem really is that I'm robbing banks, and that's against the law, and it's the job of the police to stop me. If I knew that, I would understand the situation better and deal with it in a different way. Now, in a very similar manner, perhaps, I have this entity comes to me, I don't like it, I declare it as negative because I don't like it. But let's just, for the sake of argument, say, well, what if this personality is trying to, number one, stop me from doing something I'm doing wrong, or even perhaps just trying to communicate with me to get me to understand something? Sometimes entities come because they're trying to say, I'm sorry, or they're trying to work something out, or they're trying to get you to understand their problem and release them from their situation so they can go. Sometimes they just want you to understand something about them so that their responsibility to you is relieved. I once had a situation where I had some personality near to me who went away when I was told something about that personality by another person. They wanted me to hear about them from the other so I would know the truth about them. And when I knew the truth, then they felt relieved and left. After all, do you really think that entities on the other side of this bodily existence have nothing better to do than to give you a hard time? If they really wanted to hurt you, the best way they would think of to do so is to take birth in a physical body and really screw you up here in this physical platform. But when they are just doing this from the other side, there's other reasons almost always involved. There are other reasons involved. There's another meaning to it that you have to seek out. They're trying to tell you something. They're trying to get you to understand something. So what would be the solution? To simply go into meditative state, to relax, to open up your awareness, to expand your awareness, and to simply hear, to simply receive that connection, to simply receive that contact, and accept whatever it is. And once you have actually connected, and once you actually know what it is, to deal with it. And if it really is something negative, to simply push it away so that it cannot connect to you anymore. Make a shield between you and it. Or if it is something that really you should know, to accept it and release that personality. But as far as I've seen, and this is just my own practical experience, and I'm not saying it's an absolute principle, that most of these negative things that we experience that are truly negative are from physically embodied beings in this world. And those who are just somewhere on the other side of this veil are either looking for help, they need your help, they're looking to get released, or they're bewildered and don't know what to do, or they're trying to tell you something or to get you to do something very important to them. There are other possibilities. I'm not saying that's all. There are, in exceptional cases, personalities you've done some real serious harm to who are just trying to get back at you and need to somehow get some resolution to their situation so they can move on. But these are exceptional situations. So, how to get rid of it is not the right word. Not the right phrase. Not the right question. Rid is the wrong word. The correct question is, how do I deal with it? Number one, you learn the simple technique of awareness and making yourself capable of embracing a communicative connection with this personality. And then to honestly wish to do something of benefit for that personality, or to receive the information or the energy they wish to give you, to accept it and release them from their responsibility or feeling of responsibility to give that to you. So long as you are just resisting it, resisting it, resisting it, it is persisting and persisting and persisting, because there's something you should understand. And in that way, you can deal with it. I hope that answers the question. I've got a question here which is a continuation of that, but I'm not sure I understand the words used, but maybe I understand the mood. In other words, whenever you have an energy you don't understand, or in any situation, it's always better to understand what is going on than to be understood. Or in other words, it's always better to accept and try to understand somebody's circumstances than to push them away and destroy them.